Got it. Here we go. Tom's back. Hey, everybody. Write to us at MyNorthWest.com. Text as well at 98973. Bunch of news to get to. That's a State Roofing text line at 98973. One lucky person's get a chance to be letter of the day. Had a good one yesterday. Very funny. You people, you think you're so funny with your funny, funny things. It's the kind of thing my basketball coach would say. He's trying to insult us, but doesn't know how to put it all together in one sentence. Diving into the news! By the way, I have been unable to dive in the tributary that goes into the Yakima River, known as Little Creek Town, because it has frozen over.
I wanted to ask you about that at the top of the show. You sent a great shot of it. I was wondering if you went ice skating instead.
I couldn't go. I can't get in. So I said to Dougie, who stands out there, I said, Dougie, I'm going to get a big rock and smash it and get back in there again because I'm missing it. I'm missing it.
So it's ice fishing.
To be in there right now. Right. Lower me in. Anna Scott's had a busy, busy day.
I really have.
You have, I know. I'm not being facetious. This is, you're working hard today. So let's talk about it. Where do you want to start?
Let's start with good news. Inslee, the governor, just held a press conference, just wrapping up. And he had some good news to offer on schools. Here's what he had to say.
We are opening our schools for in-person instruction. And this is such good news for our students. We know that in-person instruction is the best way to do instruction. It's best for the teachers. It's best for the students. It's best for the parents. And we know that this can be done safely. And the great news today I can share with people is that we are increasing the number of days that our students can have in-person instruction. We already have over 200,000 students who are today receiving at least some significant in-person instruction. And that is increasing every single day. And we are learning we can do this safely all over the state of Washington.
And to help everyone feel safe?
Today we are expanding the COVID testing assistance that we could provide to schools and school districts. This is part of our ongoing effort to give more students the option to return to in-person instruction. And it obviously increases access to testing, both for educators and students. The Department of Health has developed this testing pilot program during the last year, has been in place for 13 school districts, and it has become part of our playbook for returning our students to classes. So about 50 more school districts will now be participating in this volunteer program starting this month.
So that's that pilot where they have the testing program to help those various school districts. You know, you do the temperature and all of the various checks before you and this the COVID testing as they come into school. So that's going to expand to 50 more school districts by the end of the month. But they weren't able to share which districts those were going to be, only that they were kind of a mixture. You've got some rural, you've got some larger. So I expect we'll hear more about that in the days ahead. This is really, you know, the CDC came out with some guidance a couple of days ago where they said this is what we have to say about the ability for schools to return to in-person learning. And that I think, John, you've told me this a million times, the transmission out in the community doesn't really affect the schools. And that's what the science is pointing to right now. So that's basically what our guidance was already.
Since August. Right. They've had that since August. Yeah.
So that was our guidance already. The CDC guidance aligns with ours, and the parents would still have an option to do remote learning if their district goes back, if they don't feel particularly safe about it. I asked the governor if he felt that it was safe to return all K through 12 students in the state to in-person learning right now.
Well, I think what we're finding is that many of the school districts have started with the younger students. And they have built confidence after they have brought some of their younger students back. And that has allowed them to develop the protocols, have educators be comfortable with them, iron out some of the details, and then move up through the higher grades. That has been a journey that has been successful in many, many places. I have seen multiple places where high schools have been safely conducted. But the way I kind of look at, like, how would I respond for a loved one? So I have three grandchildren in public school right now. I am thrilled that they have gone back to an in-school environment in the last couple of weeks. I would have absolutely no qualms of them going to a high school right now. I would feel it was much preferable to have them in person in a biology class rather than remotely. So the answer to your question, yes, I do believe high schools can be safe. The schools are going to find their own journey on how to get that position.
Mm. So there you go.
They've been closed for almost a year, right?
Yeah, I believe it was late March when
take the summer out of it. Yeah, you take the summer out of it, but they've been closed coming up for an entire school year. So I asked Tom, we weren't sure we wanted to ask you, so what broke the logjam? What was it that finally pushed them over? Does anybody really know? Is it the 5% drop? Is it the money? Is it the fact that unions get something out of it? Are they going to take some of those federal dollars that were sent earlier, a couple of months ago, in that last program that went through? Even though of the $63 billion that went out to the school districts, very few of them have used any of that money to actually change the interior environment for the schools. The money's just sort of sitting there unused. What stopped it? What created Inslee to all of a sudden go, gosh, maybe we should, since we spend 40% of our budget on this, we should open schools up? Do we know?
I can tell you it's the science, John, is that the science continues to show that there's no...
The science! Let me do some math. August, September, okay. I'm going to get some science here. November, then I can't remember. December, January. So scientifically speaking, that's 5 months. Private schools have been operating. Private schools, Catholic schools have been operating. So 5 months, they knew back in August. But science now tells them they can open up. Are we believing that? Is anyone in the media believing that?
It plays a role. I'll say that.
Maybe it plays a role. You don't have your answer. I rest my case, Your
Honor.
That's
a rhetorical answer.
Yeah, no longer. Stop badgering the witness.
Sit down. You can't handle the truth.
I can take it.
I've got a couple of quick questions. One is, so I have heard, because right now, just because we're based in Seattle, and Seattle's the biggest school district in the entire state, that this comes home to roost here more than any place else, which is the issue of ventilation. I understand the science that indicates that kids are not carriers like we'd expect from adults, and that transmission often in schools is lower than it is out in the outside community. But one of the standards that CDC is issuing in terms of their guidelines is ventilation. And I have read that Seattle Public Schools has a lot of older buildings, and that the ventilation aspects of those schools to bring them up to speed are not in. I don't know if you consider them in process or aren't done or aren't completed. That's one of the physical components that hasn't ultimately been addressed. Do you know if that has yet?
I don't believe so. I think it was just a few days ago that some elementary school kids in Seattle School District were maybe not going to return as soon as they were originally going to, which I think was next month early was the plan. And I think that the HVAC system has something to do with that. And they're older buildings, and they don't have the money to do that. So I don't think that's been addressed. And I don't think Seattle is the only district that's going to have that issue.
I'm sure
I know
not.
Some of the larger districts in the North Sound are not reopened for similar reasons. So that's definitely going to be an issue. For now, the governor says, as long as you mask up, you're doing the screenings maintaining social distance. And then It's still, some of it's still, I will tell you, it was sort of vague, the press conference today, it was just kind of what we've already been doing and a hybrid model, and there's federal dollars, there's plenty of money. He did say that, John. There's plenty of federal money out there. If more than the 50 need the help with the testing, they can get in on that. So we'll see. We'll see how many parents send their kids back and how many districts open up, because it is still up to each individual district. Yeah. And there is still concern about the variants, and not everyone that I've spoken to is convinced. And I don't mean public health officials, just public in general is convinced that everybody's kind of in a wait and let's see in the next couple of weeks what these variants do and make sure, because they don't know that necessarily applies to the school situation. If it's all variant, if that variant takes over, so to speak.
And then
they do have a science experiment going on now. They have science experiments going on now called a private school. They've got kids in Catholic schools. They're not giving it to the teachers. They're not giving it to the administration. They're not giving it to the admin. They're not giving it to the vice principals. The kids are not getting it. There's very few kids that are gaining transmission. And if it is, it's asymptomatic. So we actually see it going on. So I know the governor loves science. He mentioned his kids going back to school for biology. He could have looked at the studies of September, October, November and seen what was happening in the private schools that have already opened that are providing education for their kids, and he could have used that. But I wonder if it has to do with Joe Biden being back in the White House now. Did it have anything? It's not political. Of course, no one's going to ask him those questions because the idea is to keep it as vague as possible. Tom, if you have any other questions on this, Hattie does bring other things in her basket.
Yes, I've got one more then. And that is, so we've had 13 school districts operating in part of this pilot test program where they are tested every day when they come into school. Is that?
Yes.
Okay, so my question is...
It's once a week, yeah.
Once a week, okay. So my question is, do in those 13, and then you said they're going to expand it, another 50, so that'd be 63. Are those kids in school all the time? In person instruction, or is it still a hybrid model so that these 13 districts and now ultimately 63, is that like 5 days a week or is that like 2 days a week? Do you know what kind of daily
regimen? Yeah, I know what you're saying. It's
yeah.
I know that there's still largely the hybrid model. Not everyone back every day because you have to maintain that distancing, right? You've got to be able to do that.
You can't
do that with capacity at the school. So that is my understanding, and that's what he said going forward with these 50
and then
that
how
have
do
to happen
the,
as
and
well.
And then how do the teachers do that? So is it that does the teacher – is there like one in-person teacher who just for her 5 days or his 5 days teach in person and then the other teachers are – teaching remotely and they're different teachers or does the teacher come in?
I think it's a district-based plan, but I think yes, in some cases. So if you've got, let's say, a teacher that for whatever reason, age or health issues or just because is less comfortable teaching in person, that teacher could handle the remote.
Does the remote
stuff.
And
then you have the teachers who are fine.
Very interesting.
Yeah, so I think that's the way it's playing out.
Mm-hmm. Good. Okay.
All right.
Next topic.
Go ahead.
Drugs? You want to talk about some drugs?
Yes. Decriminalization.
Okay.
Hugs, by the way, let me just say this at the top. Tom and I were with Jesse Jackson. Hugs, not drugs. Right, Tom?
I'm not even that high on hugs.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. As long as it's not the war on drugs, which is the big message here, is that didn't work. And you can just look around and see that didn't work. So this is, Oregon has already passed it. The voters approved a law. It kicked in a few weeks back where they've decriminalized small amounts for personal use of most drugs. And the idea is to invest instead in treatment, much, much more treatment. And that's what we're talking about here. This proposal comes from Democratic Representative Lauren Davis, and she shared with the House Public Safety Committee on this bill when it got its hearing how her own personal experience when she helped an addicted friend helped her get to this proposal.
There was one particular night that I will never forget. He couldn't find a vein and was growing increasingly frustrated. He would trace his bruised and swollen arms up and down looking for a spot. He bent over and tried his foot, first the right, then the left. When that didn't work, he went into the bathroom, looked in the mirror, and puffed out his neck in an effort to inject there. After several hours of this, his arms, face, and legs were covered in blood. He began to weep. Tears streamed down his cheeks, and he whimpered, "I can't stop. I can't stop." His suffering was deep and profound. His suffering was so many things, but it shouldn't have been illegal. He deserved help, not handcuffs. Substance use disorder is a response to trauma. The real question is not why the drugs, but why the pain. This disease is about not wanting to experience the present because it is too painful a place to be.
So that's what she says, that the negative impact, like if you go after them with arrest or criminal actions of some sort, it doesn't change their behavior. So why bother to do that? We need to offer some hope, and that's the idea behind this plan. But the law enforcement community had some concerns.
Let us make clear that Washington sheriffs and police chiefs would actively support this bill if the provisions legalizing the possession of controlled substances were removed. We encourage the legislature to focus these efforts on what we should do to address the problem rather than what we should stop doing. We acknowledge that the criminal justice system is not an appropriate or effective strategy to broadly address those with substance use disorder. We also agree that the criminal justice system should not be the most accessible path toward treatment. We must also acknowledge, however, that the criminal justice system has proven to be the only effective mechanism to intervene and treat many with substance use disorder.
At the same time, and I think we have this cut, Snohomish County Prosecutor Adam Cornell came out and spoke in support of the bill.
To the skeptics and opponents and those who are interested in keeping an open mind, here's what the bill does not do. The bill does not decriminalize other crimes or take away the discretion to arrest or charge those with other crimes. It doesn't get rid of our drug courts. It doesn't take away the prerogative of employers to maintain a drug-free workplace. And it doesn't take effect immediately. I anticipate an amendment that would take effect in July of 2023 that gives us the time to do this right and put a readiness check in the next legislative session. The wisdom of the times is not timeless. It is now time for a change and a new birth of wisdom.
So you also had Dan Satterberg come out and speak in favor of it, and he and Cornell both stressing, if you're going to do this, you've got to fund the treatment side of it, or it's all just going to blow up, and then you're going to have everybody pushing for serious, hardcore, you know, criminalization aspects again.
Yeah. Do we know how that would be paid for then, which is always a concern?
Couple of different things. It would all be worked out in the finance committees, but the idea is, one, that you're going to save some criminal justice dollars by not putting this through the courts and putting them in jail and various things like that. Then there's a really big federal grant program that's very specific for drug treatment that there's access to, and our own state attorney general, Bob Ferguson, just won, I think it's somewhere in the $13 million range, an opioid lawsuit that has to be spent specifically on drug treatment. That's where it's supposed to go, and that's what he's directed the legislature to do. Now, there's a lot of different bills and places vying for that, but that's the idea behind this.
Now, Oregon voters approved this. In this case, in Washington, it could be a legislative decision, correct?
That is correct. Yeah, in Oregon, it dipped into its marijuana tax dollars to pay for its treatment. This is not going to happen here. That's protected money for something else. I will say, we did hear from a couple of people who said their children had died because of drug overdoses, and that they had tried to get clean, but they had lost hope because they had so many things on their criminal record, couldn't get a job. There was no point, right? There's no hope to move forward. That's the idea here, the middle ground. So it'll be interesting to see what happens next. It got voted out of committee.
If they decriminalize it, then they also have to give free drugs.
Well, I didn't hear anyone propose that.
Well, you have to, because if you decriminalize it, you're still going to receive crime. The person's going to smash the window of the car, steal, hit the person over the head with something, steal in order to pay for the drugs that they then inject into their arms. And they're not getting the help that they want because they don't want the help that they want. For whatever reason, they're not getting it. You look what happens in Vancouver, the injection site up there, only about 6% get help. The rest come in and shoot up. So you should do what they do in Vancouver, give them the drugs for free. Then, therefore, you don't actually have the extenuating circumstances of crime that follows the addict.
I want to stress that this has a continuum of care. It's got peers, so it's got outreach where they go out. It's making sure that you get these people into the care.
And when they don't want it?
They're supposed to, like, want it more under this program.
Oh, okay.
Because of peers, people who've come through it and come out the other side. That's a big part of what this bill does.
I got it. Thank you, Hannah.
You're welcome.
Thanks.
Let me see. Hold on, Hannah. You can't leave yet. I can't get the time. I was always commenting that when you weren't there on Friday and on Monday, I said, and you still come in to do that segment and then you leave. And I always say, that shows dedication. And you always come in. I say, hi, Tom. And then you do it. Then you leave. And then, you know, it's the and I always point that out. And people, no, Tom doesn't come in just for that. But that's the kind of dedication you have to Cairo 7. If they're fighting for you, the least you can do is get on the bus, come all the way down here, put your mask on and your hazmat suit. Come on in, right? Huh?
That's right. Jesse.
For Jesse. Oh, my gosh. When I saw the stories that Rachel Bell wanted to talk about today, I said, classic. Classic R.
Classic
Bell.
Classic
Bell. By the way, you were brought to us by your mother and father and the grace of God. And also, Muckleshoot Casino. They were involved in you being with us today as well. Muckleshoot Casino, I should point that out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of like Luke, you are my father. Muckleshoot, you are my parents. One of those old things. Yes, I love this story so much. Okay, so when I was a kid, and even now, I've always loved names, whether I was in my little baby diary writing down my future children's names. What a waste that was, huh, guys? And I loved pet names back then. I would write down my future pet names. So I was intrigued when I saw this story today about the most common pet names through the ages and the most popular pet names of all times. So this company called First Vet decided to do this study. They went to the country's oldest pet cemetery. Spooky. It's called Hartsdale Pet Cemetery in Hartsdale, New York. It was founded in 1896, and there are more than 80,000 pets buried there. So I can only imagine that they sent some intern to go walk, you know, headstone to headstone, just write down the name of the pet. We just need you to write down the name of the pet.
Where are they? What country are they in? What was the accent? Let me hear it again.
Write down the name of the pets. That's a New York accent, because this pet cemetery is based in Hartsdale, New York. My whole family's from New York, so I know how to do a New York accent.
Okay, go ahead.
Hey, give me a hot dog or maybe an Empire State Building. I'm from New York. Okay. So the most popular name in that pet cemetery, 80,000 headstones since 1896, is, can I have like a womp womp ready after I say this? Because I'm not pleased. The most popular name.
I got a dramatic sting. I got dramatic sting.
I'll take it. The most popular name is Princess. More than 1 in 100 animals were named Princess. That's for a dog. And then for cats, the top name was Tiger. And they think because so many of these pets have been there so long, the first cats that came to America had tiger stripes. So let me just go through first through the decades of pet names. So the most common dog names, this is the best decade, 30s and 40s, we had Queenie and Tippy. Adorable, classic, wonderful names. In the 1960s, the most popular dog name was Lady, which I don't know what came first, you know, the Lady and the Tramp movie or the fact that this was a popular name. In the 1970s, the most popular dog name was Brandy, which
wait,
I can
slow
only
down.
Assume.
I'm writing all these down. Hang on.
Oh, good.
I
Are
am.
You the intern? The intern from First Vet. Yes. 1970s was Brandy, which of course has to come from the wonderful Looking Glass song, Brandy, what a fine dog you will be, but my life, my love, and my lady is the sea. Okay, 80s and 90s and aughts, Max is the most popular dog name. And wow, this one, I'm not with it. They said the most popular cat name in the 80s, 90s, and today is Smokey. But they said they think that's because of the 1977 Burt Reynolds film, Smokey and the Bandit. I'll tell you why they call them Smokey. They're always dark gray. It's a color thing. They look like smoke. So there you have it, folks. Princess and Max. Now, I just want to tell a quick story. So my cat's name is Poppy, P-O-P-P-Y. And I got her, I don't know, probably now 7.5, 8 years ago. And I named her Done. Well, in the last year, and I've never met another Poppy. In the last year, when everybody has been adopting pets for the pandemic, I see a friend in San Francisco gets a dog, names her Poppy. A few months ago, a friend here gets a dog, names her Poppy. A friend has a baby and names her Poppy. And now I feel like my cat that had like a cool obscure name now is like the Aiden of cats or like the Ella of cats. Like I have this like basic B cat now with this basic name. And she's like a hipster because she has to tell everyone that she had the name first. Very upsetting. Wow. Wow is right.
That was really a productive segment, wasn't it?
Why is dog, John, why is your dog named Luke?
Lou. It's named
Lou.
A friend of mine said, Nicole said to me, if your mom's, what was your mom's favorite pet? I said, Lucy. Okay, then name the dog Lucy, because when your mom died, even though she didn't mean to leave you the money, she would have used it all up in the nursing home, but she died beforehand. My mom was so cheap. As my brother said, there was nothing. There was no will because it was just like she was going to burn it all up. So I took the money when she died and I bought this cabin. And then so the idea is, since you, in honor of your mom, name your dog Lucy. I hate the name Lucy. because it reminds me of my mom's bird that used to poop on my shoulder and bite my earlobe. So then I decided to name Lou, which is close enough to Lucy.
Ah. And why is your name Poppy? Rachel?
I was trying to think. I was. So
and why is Tom
anything.
Stretching out this segment?
We're bored. We're all bored now.
Well, let me tell you this boring story. She's named after popcorn, which is my favorite snack. But I like to say she's named after the California state flower, which is where I am from. There's a name, a pet name that I want to put a kibosh on. If I hear one more pet with this name, I'm just going to not murder anyone because that's illegal, but maybe toilet paper your house. Enough with the Bella. I don't need another cat, Bella. I don't need another dog, Bella. Everybody's Bella. Enough. Hmm. And I think that is the fault of that movie. What was that movie that was filmed in Forks? I know he's bored.
Twilight.
Thank you. Yes.
Can I ask our producers, can we get out of here, please?
You know, everybody knows that Seattle has more dogs than children. People are loving this segment. Right, Princess?
I love names.
I love my cat.
Raise the freaking door!
Yeah, we are.
You guys, when we hang up, let's name my children that I'll never have. That'll be a fun game.
All right. Are they boy or girl? Twins. Let's give you twins.
They're everything and nothing. Yeah, they're twins.
Okay. All right, good. All right, going to use traditional Jewish names right out of the Bible. I'll text them to you.
We got Mordecai and we got Esther.
Veronica.
I love my cat. Bye, guys.
Bucky's Auto Service Centers. We've got 16 locations that have been around for 50 years. Sean and I are going to get in the car and drive to every single one of them after we come to your house and dial the phone for you. I hope I'm not over-promising, Sean.
I think you're underselling it.
Road trip.
Yeah.
Should we bring Tom along? When's the last time you were in a car with a stranger, Tom? I mean, not a stranger, but somebody you don't normally make out with.
What does that mean? Like, my brother?
All right, there we go. I forgot your extended family.
That's
your brothers.
Right.
You'll make out with your brothers. All right, I'm just stalling because I can't find the next story. Hang on. Oh, my thumb. The millionaire mom. This is good for Rachel. Hopefully she's still listening. This mom is very rich. She lives in Russia. And she has decided that her goal, I guess, because why not? And she could be a good mom to all of them, right? Would be to have how many children? Because at what point are you not an effective mother, Tom? When you get, what, over 40 kids?
She's shooting for 105. Okay. She already has 11. She's only 23 years old. She's had one herself and 10 with surrogates. And her husband is so rich that she says, we're going to go for it. We'd like to have 105. And she admitted that's kind of a random number. They're going to keep doing it until they decide not to. And they're shooting for 105. This
and she
story.
Loves them all the same. She loves them all the same.
I'm sure. Equally, equally not. There is a hilarious. This whole story is bunk to me. But there is a hilarious story of her sitting on this big couch with all 11 of her kids. And so she's, the one kid she had herself, biologically, is 6 years old. And you see this poor, she looks like a girl, poor girl sitting with a bunch of babies. One is in her lap, and she has this pained expression on her face. She does not look like a happy child. All the other kids are just sitting there. She's got this kind of grimace, and that's what I feel like. This poor six-year-old is suddenly realizing my life is going to be overrun with the babies. This whole the whole story sounds bogus. It's far enough away in Georgia, near Russia, that it you can't really verify it. I don't even know. I don't think I believe the story.
Hey. Chris Martin spent a long time today producing the show, finding these things, polishing this, whatever this is.
By the way, the husband is 56. So by the time these kids all make 30, he is going to
That's the sign of love.
Yes, it is. It is the sign of love.
This is... Nutty.
Oh, okay. You want to go back to dog names? I can get Rachel back on here if you'd like.
Nobody puts baby in the corner.
No, but that's right. Nobody else put baby in the corner. All right. Tracy Taylor will look at traffic. And then, by the way, you and I get a chance to hear the minimum wage sounder again. We love that because two grocery stores are going to give their employees an opportunity to experience the true minimum wage, which is $0. Yeah, Tracy Taylor.
Although it's not really a minimum wage story, but still, it's close enough.